Monitor now invite you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be Senator Everett M. Dirksen, Senate Minority Leader. Our panel consists of Lawrence E. Spivak, Mrs. May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Jack Bell of the Associated Press, and Ray Shearer, NBC News. Ned Brooks is our moderator.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is the Republican leader of the Senate, Everett M. Dirksen of Illinois. Senator Dirksen is beginning his 31st year in Congress. He served 16 years in the House of Representatives before coming to the Senate, and he has been the Republican leader of the Senate since 1959. Senator Dirksen played a leading part in the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Some political observers say that he may well be the most effective single man in the new Senate. Now we'll have the first question from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Senator Dirksen, there's been a good deal of debate over a long period of time over what the role of the minority party in Congress should be. How do you see the role of the Republican Party in Congress today?
Well, the role of the Republican Party, or any minority for that matter, would be one of constructive opposition, not blind opposition. And by constructive opposition, I mean you accept the things that are good for the country. You try to amend or modify proposals that, in your judgment and judgment of the party, are not good. And if they contain more of evil, shall I say, than of good, then you reject them. But always you try to follow a constructive line.
Congressman Ford recently suggested that the party ought to have a program of its own, an alternate program. Will the Republican Party have a program of its own in this coming session of Congress?
Well, they've been content, other than the adoption of their national platform in a convention year, to adopt a set of principles as they go along. But I don't know that it's particularly necessary to have alternatives for everything that the administration offers. If something is offered that is not good, why should you have an alternative for it?
Well, aren't the principles that the party usually espouses so general that the Democrats, the left, the right, almost everybody can accept them? Don't you have to have alternate proposals if you're going to get your image across to the country?
Not necessarily. I think in the case of those where there is constructive good by the administration, we can take a good look at it. We may want to modify it, as I've said, and we want to be heard on the subject. Now, you can come up with a substitute or an alternative, or you could come up with a whole series of amendments in order to modify it.
But as of now, you don't see any special program of your own.
No, let's nail it down and have something specific. The administration, among other things, has come up with a new immigration proposal. I think there's much good in it. It'll have to be modified somewhat, in my judgment. But we don't necessarily have to have a substitute for it in order to make it palatable and make it good for the country.
Now, the president thinks that education is the number one problem in this country today and that it needs federal aid. Now, in the past, I believe you've been opposed to federal aid to education. Do you plan to oppose federal aid to education in this Congress?
I can tell you better when I see what kind of a bill comes out of the Committee on Labor and Education.
I'm talking now about the general principle of federal aid.
Well, the real difficulty with federal aid to education has been this question of control, for one thing, and secondly, the question of need. We had Dr. Roger Freeman of Stanford University before the committee when I was still a member of that committee, and his testimony as an expert in the field, in my judgment, nailed down the fact that if you're thinking in terms of classrooms that school districts and states cannot construct, or if you're thinking in terms of teachers' pay, then certainly Dr. Freeman demolished the case for the administration. And unless there's something different in the new bill, I would still go back to his testimony and see whether or not it applies to the bill that will come before us this year.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Bell.
Senator, you and Representative Ford and National Chairman Birch set up a policy coordinating committee which seems designed to keep Republicans from riding off in different directions. At Chicago yesterday at the National Committee meeting, some of the ladies seemed rather wrathful at you and Congressman Ford and Mr. Birch because there's no woman on this committee. How come?
Well, Mr. Bell, I'm always distressed when the ladies are wrathful. And that's the last thing I would want to achieve. But when you set up a coordinating committee, you have to have regard for size, for mobility, for acceleration of the job, because things will not wait if you have an unwieldy body. Now, it ought to be remembered that this is a beginning. We're trying to constitute and reconstitute this committee, if necessary, to give adequate and proper representation to all components in the Republican Party. And I suppose as time goes along, we'll probably reach that objective. You won't reach it just overnight, I'm sure. And so, as the different things fit into their respective slots, there certainly will be some modifications, I'm sure.
So that modifications in the way of a woman member or two women members?
Well, there are women members on the Republican National Committee.
Yes, and but they're not represented, they say.
And as a matter of fact, there is a rule to the effect there must be a woman for every committeeman. So it would not be so difficult to work out, I'm sure, in setting up the coordinating committee in its final form. But mind you, we started from a very fresh start on the matter. And so in due time, I'm sure this thing will develop and become an effective instrumentality.
Well, will this committee make policy?
Well, I've always said that your policy actually is made by your elected representatives. They come from the people, and they speak, and they're the only ones who have a vote in the House of Representatives and in the Senate.
Well, if they make policy,
in an advisory capacity and in a consultative capacity, things will be thrown out on the table for discussion, and there could well be modifications of Republican policy before you get through.
Mrs. Craig.
Senator, we seem to be putting our principal defense dependence on nuclear missiles and nuclear submarines. Are we working on biologicals and chemicals which would confuse and disable the enemy but not kill and blast cities?
Work has been done. In fact, a great deal of work has been done in that field. But frankly, it hasn't been ventilated and it hasn't been discussed in any detail so far as the joint leadership is concerned. On those occasions when we've had the director of CIA or the secretary of defense and others discussing our defenses, always they discuss manned bombers, missiles, Polaris submarines, and that sort of thing. But nothing in the chemical field has actually been discussed. I presume the reason is that it's a rather delicate subject, and you don't want the thing noised about too much unless the facts are clearly known and clearly expressed. And so I have taken no particular interest in it because it doubtless would be your last resort, it seems to me, having been under gas attack in World War I. So I can speak, I think, as of knowledge, as to how hideous and ghastly it can be.
Well, Senator, I did not understand that these proposed chemicals and biologicals would be poison gas in that they would kill.
Well, they're supposed to immobilize the enemy.
Yes.
But, frankly, it has not been discussed to a point that I could give you any kind of an answer that would be truly responsive.
Would that not be more humane?
Well, it might be. I still confess that I am not an expert in the field where you gas an enemy army an enemy instrumentality and try to immobilize them.
Do you know
It's
anything?
A good deal. Let me round that out. Yeah. It's probably a good deal like this gas they had out in Vietnam, so I understand, that defoliated the trees and the shrubs and everything in the countryside. We heard very little about it, and we hear nothing about it now.
Do you know where the Red Russia and Red China are working in this field?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Mr. Shearer.
Senator, the last time you were on this program, you went immediately off into the hospital and poor Larry Spivak got blamed. You had a slight disability. Now, President Johnson is in the hospital. Congress has been dilly-dallying for years over some sort of disability arrangement to put into effect when a president is out of action. Isn't it time that Congress acted on this? Doesn't this give it new urgency?
The fact of the matter is that we did get a disability bill out of the subcommittee last year in the 88th Congress. It went no further, and I think it'll be one of the first orders of business. And let me make it abundantly clear that that isn't for a moment any reflection upon the health and vigor and vitality of President Johnson. Because I know him, and I know what a vigorous person he really is.
How should it work? What should the provision be? Who should judge when the president is disabled?
There are three or four different approaches to it, and we've had that problem in committee. Senator Bayh of Indiana, who's the chairman of the subcommittee, had one. His approach had, I think, the approval of the American Bar Association. Senator Rusk of Nebraska had one, and Senator Keating of New York had still another approach. But by the time we get it on the committee table for discussion, I'm sure that we can probably work out something that will be palatable and practical.
You mentioned Vietnam a moment ago. You were at the White House Thursday when the president briefed you on the situation there. What do you think the United States should do about Vietnam? We can't seem to win it, yet we can't pull out. What do we do?
Well, there are three things you could do. And there again, I don't propose to make policy for the administration. You can strike north into the Viet Cong territory. You can get out, as Senator Morris would have us do. Or we can muddle as we've been muddling in the hope that we can get that political situation reasonably stabilized, and then we can move forward toward a military victory. But let me remind you, if we pull out of Vietnam, and I'm not one of those who counsels that course, it will mean that the southernmost flank of the line that runs from Korea to Vietnam, and which is our outside defense perimeter, will suddenly have that flank turned, and then all the trusted islands in the Pacific, as well as the Philippines, are in danger. And I will not counsel that kind of a course.
You favor more muddling, then, as you put it.
Well,
present policy.
Oh, what can you do but muddle until you can get the political situation stabilized? First, you're dealing with one government, then you're dealing with another. And when stability is lacking, how can you very well go forward with a vigorous military effort?
Mr. Spivak.
Senator Dirksen, there are some political cynics who say that your coordinating committee is a plot rather than a plan, a plot to keep the rising power of the governors in check. What's your answer to that?
Well, I've never heard it characterized as a plot. There are, after all, 17 Republican governors. There are 172 congressmen and senators on the Republican side, all of whom have been elected. Now, the governors have their proper place. But we've been dealing so much at the national level here, since this centers upon the Republican National Committee, that you think first in terms of the national frame. Now, the governors will certainly have a part in this undertaking. And I think Governor Smiley of Idaho understands that fully, because for an hour or more last week, we discussed the whole matter in my office.
But, Senator, you Republicans keep saying all the time that the more power ought to go back to the states, that there's too much federal power. Now, with 17 Republican governors who have been elected, why don't you give them more than just five little seats in your coordinating committee?
Well, what ratio would you suggest? 5 out of 17? And then you look at the joint leadership, which consists of only 9 out of 172.
Now, what's the status today of your coordinating committee? Who has accepted your invitation? Has President Eisenhower accepted
your
invitation?
The invitations have gone out only recently, and I presume the responses are coming back.
So far, nobody has accepted.
Well, that I can't say, because the responses would go to the chairman of the Republican National Committee. And I have not seen him to talk to. I have not called him. He has not called me. Therefore, I wouldn't be able to tell you who has responded and who will attend.
Mr. Bell.
Senator Morton said at the Chicago meeting of the National Committee that this coordinating committee was in business. It didn't make any difference whether the National Committee liked it or not. Was that your view of it?
Well, it's in business in the sense that the senators and the House members who constitute the joint leadership are here. Now, the rest of it is more or less advisory, and it's targeted on the Republican National Committee. So you can go ahead and do business if you're going to deal in the field of policy for the minute the first major administration bill comes to the floor of the House or Senate. You're going to have to be in business whether you like it or not.
Well, Chairman Birch estimated it cost $150,000 to operate this committee for 1 year. Where are you going to get that money?
Well, as a matter of fact, the estimate that was first bandied about was not $150,000. It was $250,000, and they felt there would be no difficulty in securing that money.
From where?
Oh, well, you know how political funds are raised.
Well, I don't, Senator, but you do, and well, I thought maybe you could tell me.
Well, I'll just tell you. You go out and pass the hat among people who can contribute substantial sums.
You go to Texas first and then New York, do you? Is that the...
Oh, you can make an allotment to states, or you can just get up a list of individuals, and you assign so many to this person, so many to that person. But the new chairman of the Republican National Committee, I can assure you, is no amateur in the field of raising money and in the field of party organization.
You feel quite confident then you could get the $150,000 without any trouble?
Well, he's had no difficulty ever getting money to put Ohio on the right side of the ledger. And I anticipate, on the basis of long experience, that he can do so at the national level.
Well, Senator, I didn't think Ohio was on the right side of the Republican ledger in the last election.
Not the last election, but what about all the elections before that?
Well, there are some of those where the Democrats won,
too. Well, you just
pick
out one and try to make a case on that.
Mrs. Craig.
Senator, it has always seemed to me that anyone who succeeded to the presidency ought to be elected by all the people if possible, not the cabinet officer or even the speaker. What would be your idea of amending the Constitution to have two vice presidents, one executive to help the president and one legislative to be there, giving us another chance at the succession?
Well, Mrs. Craig, if you're going down that road, why not have three or four vice presidents? A bill was introduced in the House of Representatives some years ago by a Pennsylvania congressman. I think he provided for three vice presidents and laid out the duties that each one should perform. I don't see how you can quite do it. You either have a vice president or you don't have a vice president. You don't operate the government of the United States like you do a commercial corporation. You have one who would succeed the president in case of death, resignation, retirement, or disability, and no more than that. As for the rest of it, there, of course, duties can be assigned to people who can be employed at any level, any salary level, any title level in government.
Well, Senator, the way the presidents are now using the one vice president, don't you think we need two?
No, I do not.
Mr. Scherer.
Senator, the Goldwater forces averted a fight in Chicago by having Mr. Birch step down. But haven't Republicans really only papered over the split by electing Ray Bliss chairman? Doesn't the old question still exist? Who controls the party, the Goldwaterites or the moderates who opposed him?
Oh, I think those things finally cure themselves. Time is the great healer. And really, the major factor to be kept in mind constantly in the party are the people who compose the party, the millions who have an interest in the success of the party, so that at top level, perforce, it's not a case of papering over. I think it'll find its own level, and then you'll have a unified party, a cohesive party, and you'll go on to a victory.
This will happen by 1968?
Well, certainly in the by-elections, I anticipate that we ought to do right well.
Who's going to lead the party in 6 years? Who do you see as the top names, the top contenders?
Far be it from me to name anybody so far in advance, because if I did, who knows, it might stick. And there might be others who would take exception to me advancing the cause of some particular individual.
We have about 2.5 minutes remaining, Mr. Spivak.
The UN is in a hassle today over the Russians' refusal to pay about $52 billion in the debt they owe the UN. In the past, you've been for a tough United States stand in the UN. Have you any proposals for us as to what ought to be done about that?
Well, I have this much of a proposal. Unless we show our teeth and insist that these funds be paid, and if we go off in some other direction, it would be tantamount to amending that charter. And once you do it, you may have others besides Sukarno beginning to move out of the UN family. So I think the United States, through its ambassador, ought to insist that the charter be followed with respect to Section 19 and the loss of vote in the General Assembly if they fail to pay up.
Mr. Bell.
Senator, Republicans are talking about unity at this point. It seems to me you have a special problem in the Senate, however. How do you unify a party there that embraces Senator Javits of New York and Senator Thurman of South Carolina?
Well, if out of 32 you can get, say, 27 or 28 to track on the major issues, isn't that a high degree of unity in anybody's coin?
How many times do you think you can get 27 or 28?
We have done it on occasions, and we did it on the cloture bill in anticipation of civil rights, and we did it on civil rights because we got 27 Republican votes.
Mrs. Craig.
Senator Javits wants the Republicans to write a whole new platform. Do you think you need a whole new platform?
They have no authority to write a new platform. That is a prerogative of the National Committee. That's why I indicated a moment ago, you do, betide and betime, write a statement of principles for guidance as conditions change. But you have no authority to write a new platform.
But should you write one?
Well, I see no particular reason for it, because we can meet the changes as we go along.
Why are you so upset about closing up surplus Veterans Administration hospitals, Senator?
Well, they never even consulted with the national commanders of these various organizations. And secondly, why didn't they give the states a chance to take these over if they wanted them? In our own case, in Dwight, Illinois, we could use that for retarded children in the states.
Senator, I
had no chance
long
to get it.
That's a long story, and I'm afraid we're not going to be able to explore it thoroughly. I'm sorry to have to interrupt, but I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Senator Dirksen, for being with us.